Hi everybody, my name is Kenny McIntosh and this is the SmackDown Summary. I'm being quieter than I normally am because I do not want anyone to have a spike of noise and have to swerve off the road and die. As I've said before, I think listening to David and I while operating heavy machinery is not a good idea. But don't worry, this is SmackDown. You can operate as much heavy machinery around this lady as you like. Sondra, hello. I don't quite know why that happened, but yeah.
I'm not super sure. I mean, operating, you say that in such a tone, right? Like, ooh, operate heavy machinery around her. But like, what are people doing to me exactly then? Like, operate it around me, right? Not like, I don't know.
I didn't, got scary and dark
all of a sudden.
I didn't say we were operating heavy machinery on you. That would be a different kind of podcast.
I mean, I'm a big heavy machinery fan if we watch NXT. I don't know if I want them on me.
Well, I mean, I might get crushed. I feel like if, you know, we have a lot of listeners who have their own kind of Twitter things and stuff. I feel like this is the sort of thing that Karan would be mentally scarred for life if he saw you with heavy machinery. But I feel like Tammy and her boobs would probably be hosting the release before it cuts to you with the heavy machinery. So it's nice to see the listeners would be involved in whatever happens.
We want to involve the listeners as much as we can, although...
You're basically inviting listeners to group sex. Amazing. Go ahead. Why not? I have no part in this, ladies and gentlemen, so when you turn
Nowhere
up to
Nola... I've been dragged into this situation against my will.
I'm saying nothing, anyway. listen, roleplays, fine if that's what you're into, Sondra. Let's not get involved with it here in the podcast. Keep your proclivities to yourself.
Fine, I suppose. You're ruining all my fun.
People usually feel this is the safe place.
It's not the safe place.
So obviously we're here to talk SmackDown. Before we talk about SmackDown, I'd said this to David. I feel like over the next couple of weeks, I'm probably going to have to sort of give you guys the floor to discuss anything that involves SmackDown that happens on the other shows. So before we talk about this show, talk me through your thoughts of Shane McMahon appearing on Raw in a segment with Kurt Angle where he kind of... They're pally, and then at the end of the show when Kurt's about to announce his Survivor Series team, Shane and sort of a ton of SmackDown talent, you know, Becky Lynch, Tamina, Carmella, Natalia, Rusev, The New Day, Dolph Ziggler, Bobby Roode, Nakamura, AJ Styles, the Hype Bros, all these different people turn up and they sort of just invade Raw, they go backstage, they beat loads of people up. What was your takeaway from the beginning of this angle they're trying to do in the lead up to Survivor Series?
Well, when they first appeared on the stairs, when the roster first appeared, and it was like, oh, SmackDown's here, that's really interesting and kind of cool, and they're gonna, you know, have a stare down with Raw, that's neat. And I thought, okay, it's kind of cool, you know, they're showing solidarity. It doesn't really make any sense that the people who are there, because I don't really understand why certain members of the SmackDown roster are just like buddy buddy with each other at this point. But then when they started attacking Raw, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Raw didn't do anything to you. Like, Kurt Angle made a couple snippy comments about Raw, and so did Paul Heyman. But it's not like the roster heard those comments and immediately got on a plane and was there by the end of the show, right? Like, the roster was there. And Shane McMahon confirmed on SmackDown last night that this was the plan all along. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't like the SmackDown roster all effectively turning heel. Shane McMahon is a prick. Shane McMahon is an awful human being. This is the Shane McMahon who yanked a contract out from under Heath Slater. I am back at that level with Shane McMahon again. I don't like him. I don't want to see him. I don't think he's a very good authority figure on my show. Thank fuck Daniel Bryan is calling him out on his bullshit, because I don't like this. I really, really hate it. And there are a lot of people online who seem to say, this doesn't make any sense, and they don't like it at all, and I am very firmly in that camp. It doesn't do
anything. It's interesting to me, because I feel like it does make sense. Like, SmackDown...
What are they fighting for? Why would SmackDown attack Raw?
I'm going to get to it. SmackDown is consistently the B show, whether it's, you know, getting main events of pay-per-views for SummerSlam, for WrestleMania. Guys are kind of tossed aside. SmackDown is thought of as the laughing stock, you know. All that kind of stuff. And then I think that, you know, you talked a little bit about the Kurt Angle comments, but I think the Kurt Angle comments sort of solidified what they did at the end of the show, because he essentially said that that roster has no chance without AJ Styles. And then what was so great about it was they had a man on the inside. They had AJ Styles on the inside. They let they let Raw keep him an extra night. Raw was given Jason Jordan by Daniel Bryan. SmackDown didn't get anything back. Raw was given AJ Styles for these two nights. SmackDown hasn't got anything. So there's all these the little things that happen that SmackDown seems to get shafted. Just kind of come at it from a different perspective. I think that they went a little bit too quickly with Shane sort of being more of a heel, but I don't think he necessarily is a complete heel, and I think that his stance kind of makes sense. Like, I understand why SmackDown are doing it, but that was kind of my thought heading into this week's SmackDown. And they don't really give us any, time to wait. We've got Shane coming out first. He's sort of like, does his usual sort of how's it going to the city. And then he kind of explains what happened. He said, when Kurt Angle called and needed an attraction for the Demon, he hatched his plan. He had AJ stay another night so they could do what they wanted to do.
But see, that's my problem right there. That's my problem, is that Shane McMahon didn't justify himself to me. Shane McMahon made himself look like an even bigger prick, because he's saying like, oh yeah, I lent you AJ Styles. And at that moment, I'm like, oh, I'm going to use AJ Styles to, orchestrate this nefarious attack on an entire Raw roster that hasn't done anything to me. And I understand that. I mean, later on, you're going to say he said that, I had learned you have to strike first. But strike first against what? Like,
against the flagship show that gets all of the love and all of the attention over SmackDown.
But I feel like that's not what he said. I feel like he was just like, we have to strike first. Like, I don't feel like there are any stakes in this. Like, yeah, I guess it's for bragging rights, but it's,
I think they
not
do need
like...
to, they do need to add stakes. I think they do need to add stakes as it goes forward. But, like, I guess for me, like, I'm fine with just, this is the beginning of the story. Like, I understand why some people are concerned, but it's interesting that a lot of people just kind of seem to be like, it doesn't make any sense. No matter what they do going forward. Like, because it would probably have been too soon to do the attack back from Raw. Because, Sheamus saying SmackDown are ready. Last year SmackDown were pretty much the baby faces against Raw, right? That's kind of an agreement.
Well, because Stephanie.
Because the SmackDown people tended to be more endeared to the SmackDown wrestlers.
Yeah.
If SmackDown have a heelish element this time, it doesn't really bother me, because a lot of times in WWE, the heels actually come from a place of having a point, Sami Zayn, the reason he turned heel is because nothing was working out for him. The reason Shane is having SmackDown strike is because SmackDown always gets shafted, It's like, I think my favorite thing from Raw, which, again, people seem to be like really baffled by, and I know you were upset by it, but like in the good way, the fact that Chad Gable attacked Jason Jordan first, good. Because Jason Jordan left him cold and dry. The interview that Chad Gable did right after Jason Jordan left, Renee Young, I think it was Renee Young that conducted the interview, is that right?
I think
it was
so.
Renee. Renee asked him, did Jason call you and let you know? No, he didn't.
Yeah, because I do remember Chad Gable tweeting during the segment on Raw when Jason Jordan was revealed to be Kurt Angle's son, and now on Raw, that Chad Gable actually tweeted out, like, wait, what? and that was an interesting story element. Like, I understand that Chad Gable might be upset with Jason Jordan, but they've done interviews and stuff where he's like, no, I'm happy for Jason. That's really cool. So apparently he's been internalizing this, and Chad Gable turned heel, and that's fine, I guess. Like, Gable and Benjamin are effectively heels now, going against the heel Usos.
I think the Usos are babyface now. That's the thing. Because the Usos and New Day... I think what was confusing for us the other week was, the New Day and the Usos had this truce. And we were kind of, okay, is this a real truce or is it not? But then at the same time, Gable and Benjamin apparently turned heel, and I didn't really realize they had. Last week
I mean, last week when they refused to shake the Usos' hands, it was kind of like, oh, well, that's pretty heelish. And then this week we saw Gable and Benjamin be more heelish as well. Well, Gable specifically. So if that's the direction they're going, that's fine. Like, if he's going to actually be a heel, then that's fine. But I don't think that they're putting it across very well. And I think my big problem with the invasion is it just makes no one likable to me. I don't buy the motivation. I understand what you're saying, but it just doesn't work for me at all. So it actually hurt my enjoyment of SmackDown as a whole this week, because there's so much talk about the invasion, but then people are still sort of fighting each other, and there's another fucking fatal five-way women's match. I'm so angry.
We can share in the anger of that. I mean, because what's interesting is this has, for me, rejuvenated my interest in SmackDown, like, by
it's
a mile.
Mine.
Because before it's been like, oh, we're all just kind of fighting and nobody's really fighting for anything. And now it's like, so anyways, let's talk about the opening segment that kind of ties in. So Shane kind of explains what happened. And then he said, you know, Kurt Angle had the audacity to say that Raw's stars were superior and SmackDown wasn't on the same level. So when the time was right, you know, they did what they did. Then Sami Zayn comes out to interrupt. Is there anything better than smug Sami Zayn dancing? I don't think so.
No. No, it absolutely gives me life.
It is
so
good.
It's one of the only things I enjoyed on the show besides Fashion Dogs.
So Sami is here, and Sami said, you know, Shane's out there tonight as commissioner, but if he were Shane the competitor, Sami would just take him out in 1 second. He would just leave him hurting worse than he was at Hell in a Cell. And then Sami, in sort of like the most glorious prick way possible, says, you know, look, me and Kevin have mulled it over, and as a gesture of good faith, we'll be on Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. We'll carry the load as we always do. Because, of course, Sami's and Kevin Owens want attention. They want to be the biggest thing going, so they don't want to be left out of this thing. Think about how much Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens would enjoy being the reason SmackDown won and sticking it to Shane that that's the case.
It would be incredible. I mean, that's absolutely their motivation, and it makes perfect sense.
So,
and I love that from Sami Zayn. Honestly, like, in this promo, Sami Zayn was being a smug prick, but I was just like, he's going up against smug prick Shane McMahon, so Sami's a babyface again. Like, how am I supposed to boo him in this situation? I just can't.
I understand for you that it's very hard for you to boo Sami Zayn anyway.
It's very hard, and I was starting to get there. You know, I was starting to come to the point where I was like, okay, well, he's a heel, and he did break my heart, and boo him for that, but he's so amazing. But now, like, putting him up against Shane McMahon, who I do not like right now, and then, you know, obviously the main event match that was made, how am I supposed to boo Sami Zayn against that cretin of humanity?
I never realized before this, like, I was never like, even with Hell in a Cell, I was never like, I want to see Shane versus Sami. I was like, I kind of want to see it now. Like, I think they'd have a good match.
I do too. My favorite thing about the promo was when Sami came out and initially just goes, no hard feelings about Hell in a Cell, right?
He also ska danced at Shane, which was tremendous.
Yes, he did. He really, really did. So, and I, you know, and Shane McMahon's like, you weren't worried about my health and my safety. And I'm like, Shane, you were jumping off a cell. Like, what did you think was going
to
happen?
What was funny about that was he says that, and then he goes, but to add insult to injury, you place Kevin Owens on top of me. Because you can tell that's what he's really annoyed about. He doesn't really care that he, you know, he was jumping off a cell anyway. But it's the fact that Sami Zayn put Kevin Owens on top of him. So Shane McMahon went through all this agony to lose as well. So I like the motivations of all the characters here. I feel like with this part, I get all the characters' motivations. I like that Shane kind of, you know, you can tell that Shane is reluctant and that, of course, he's going to want Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens on his team, but he doesn't really want them on his team because of what they did to him. So instead, he puts Sami in a match to determine whether he's going to qualify against Randy Orton. Sami sells the fact that it's going to be Randy Orton tremendously. And that's our main event. So I thought it was a good opening segment, and I enjoyed it.
It was a good opening segment, and I understand all the character motivations. I just don't agree with who's the babyface and who's the heel.
We then go into we get the New Day backstage. They pass some fruit that has paper beside it, calling it raw fruit, and they go insane. It was really funny.
I don't know why this made me laugh so hard, but just the idea of just a pile of fruit sitting on a table with the worst Sharpie handwritten sign that just says raw fruit and the New Day being so raging about it. I don't know. It made me laugh so hard. It was almost like, you know, Raw set a trap for the New Day or something. I was expecting some sort of like net to fall down on them or something. That would have been amazing. That would be something for Fashion Files, probably.
That leads us into a match with the New Day against Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. We've got the Usos in commentary. My favourite bit of the Usos in commentary... The Usos were great in commentary, fair play. They at one point went, is this American Alpha? Oh, no, it's American Alpha 2.0, like a sequel. So, like, not as good as the original. Once you've seen one, you've seen them all. Like, it was so good. And then Gable and Benjamin cheat to win. But you had a little bit of an issue with them... with how they won, and I can completely understand why, because I had the same thoughts, so talk us through.
Okay, so, first of all, the Usos were pretty good on commentary, and I remember a time when the Usos were terrible on commentary. Like, one of them did commentary for main event for a while, and it was atrocious.
Do you know what was the problem, though? Do you know the reason it wasn't good? They didn't have a penitentiary yet.
They didn't have a penitentiary. The penitentiary has solved everything, it seems. So bless the fashion police for bringing the Usos to their penitentiary and bringing them, like, I don't know, where they can flourish and have their own penitentiary and be awesome. But so the finish of this match, and the match was good. Like, I mean, it's going to be good, right? It's New Day versus Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. It's going to be good.
American Alpha 2.0.
Sure. But the finish of the match doesn't really make any sense to me, because Shelton Benjamin is on the outside, Chad Gable's in the ring, and Chad Gable, like, the ref's back is turned or something, and Chad Gable throws Shelton Benjamin into the rope or something, and Shelton Benjamin just kicks Xavier Woods between the shoulder blades, and Chad Gable pins him. So, like, a kick to the back is what beat the New Day, who were the champions for well over a year before. I don't understand this. Like, if it would have been, you know, he cheated to win and, you know, he got kicked in the back and then, you know, Chad Gable hit a finisher of some sort or any kind of offensive move, then it would have maybe been a little bit different for me. But it just, it fell really flat, because I was like, he just got pinned by being kicked once in the back and that's it. And I mean, I didn't like it.
The bigger problem is that with the matches that the Usos and the New Day have had, the stuff that Xavier was kicked out of.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the thing. It doesn't make any sense. And it really doesn't. I don't know. Like, I wasn't a fan. And it's not even really cheating, right? Like, yeah, the ref's back is turned, but it's a tag team match. Like, you often have tag team partners do, like, one offensive move or something, and it's not like you get disqualified for it. The ref would just be like, hey, don't do that.
I do like so the commentary, where the commentary tried to sell what it was.
Bless them for trying.
Cody Graves was like, you know, he didn't know that somebody was going to just, like, whack their leg off the middle of his back, and it was, you know, he didn't see it coming. That's why, you know, it was his downfall. Bless Cody.
It's like if you're distracted when you get hit, like, the power of the hit goes up in, like, infinitely. Like, it's like when you get attacked backstage, right? Like, one hit backstage and you are out of a match. But as many hits as possible in a match and you're like, ah, I'm fine.
Yep. That took us backstage to Daniel Bryan addressing the women's division. They've already got the Survivor Series team. It's going to be Charlotte, Becky, Naomi, Tamina, and Carmella. My favorite part of the whole thing was he was like, don't worry, you're all in the team. And Lana's like, Bryan, there are six of us. And he's like, oh, you're not in it.
Because it's like, oh yeah, not you, because of course not you.
Because Daniel Bryan,
because that's the best decision.
Daniel Bryan knows how I feel about Lana, and he makes me happy. And that's why we're always going to be friends. So then...
why were the women all just hanging out backstage together?
Well, I think they'd been called to speak to Daniel Bryan. That was the
whole
idea.
Oh, they were summoned? Okay.
Yeah, I imagine, because why else would you be standing all together reluctantly?
Because I thought he came in and was like, oh, I'm glad you're all here.
I mean, I would like to assume that they had been summoned there, because otherwise it makes no sense. So let's just pretend that we've added that little story part in.
Okay.
But he says that, you know, they're all on the team, and there's going to be a fatal five-way to determine the team captain. But the most important thing was not, you know... Somebody tweeted me last week, there have been 11 multi-women tag matches on SmackDown since WrestleMania. Now 12 with this one. So that's 3 months' worth of multi-women matches on SmackDown from April to October. But the more important thing is Carmella is missing a dog. She is missing an Ellsworth, and Bryan said he would send out a search team. So...
in the most sarcastic way possible, he's like, yeah, I'll send out a search party. I kind of liked Carmella being like, my leash is empty and I do not like it.
Yep, it was funny. And that takes
I'm missing my Ellsworth. It made me laugh. I really liked, like, that was my favorite part of the segment, was Carmella missing Ellsworth and Daniel Bryan just cannot be bothered to care, because Daniel Bryan doesn't like James Ellsworth anymore.
No. That takes us up to Fashion Dogs, which I am going to put my money down here. I think it's the best Fashion Files so far. In terms of story, in terms of execution, I think they nailed every single part of this. I would, to the point where if somebody sat down and said this wasn't funny, I would argue with them about it. I would argue with them about why this is... Because sometimes they do some where, like, I'll find something funny or you'll find something funny, but it's not really funny, it's just terrible. and like you just laugh at it, but like this was solid. The story was solid. So the story is a takeoff of
it was great. And you know, even from the intro where, you know, they're showing them walking in slow motion and everything, and then the ascension, you see them like running up behind Freeze and Fandango, because of course they just want to be friends.
And ascension are now in the opening graphic as well.
They are
so
stepping up in the world.
It's a riff on Reservoir Dogs, obviously. We cut to Breezango in their suits. They argue about which pink they wanted to be from the movie. Tickle Me Pink or Hot Pink was the other one, I think. And then the Ascension are there. The Ascension have Ellsworth.
There can't be two Tickle Me Pinks.
There can't. It's impossible. The Ascension have Ellsworth tied up to a chair with duct tape over his mouth. They're threatened to cut off his chin because somebody saw him with a briefcase, which of course the Ascension would figure that any briefcase is the briefcase. They're trying to get information out of him, but he just barks at them, because apparently James Ellsworth just barks now. The thing is, I'm not gonna lie. If a woman was barking and a man was making her bark, people would have a problem with it. I have an issue that James Ellsworth is barking. It is problematic.
I don't have an issue with it because James Ellsworth wants to be in this situation.
I call bullshit on that theory. If this was a woman, even if she wanted to, I'm not saying you here, but there is a portion of the audience who would go batshit crazy that a woman is barking like a dog on a leash.
WWE does have a problematic history with making women bark like dogs against their will.
True. I just want to say, for the sake of clarity, I think it's problematic to have a man barking like a dog as his new routine. Was he
barking like a dog as a new routine, or was it because it was fashion dogs specifically?
He never gets to speak otherwise. So, and he is on a leash all the time, and she refers to him as a dog. So,
well, yeah, but that's their thing. That's their kink.
I'm just saying,
don't kink shame Kenny.
I'm not kink shaming. Listen, I've heard worse. All I'm saying is, if this was a woman, I feel we would have a lot of people having issues, and I'm just bringing to the forefront.
I think they might. I wouldn't.
And I'm not saying you would. Because the thing is, I was actually, one of my friends, she was actually educating me a little bit in some feminism stuff. Because feminism is like the most double-edged sword in the world. I'm so behind it, but some feminists just drive me mental. Absolutely mental. And she was talking about, she was like, educate me on the different kinds of feminism that you can get. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So I'm not a bad guy for thinking that some ultra feminists need to chill out a little bit. That's not me being a dick. And she's like, no, because actually there's feminism, and then there's this sort of like ultra left wing feminism that's become like, you know, let's jump on anything to make it about feminism, and sometimes it's not. And I was like, well, I feel better now that I've had some internal thoughts that I've not expressed. So that was a school week for me. Anyway, so the Ascension end up threatening to pour gasoline on James Ellsworth.
But it's not gasoline, because they ask, is that gasoline? I mean, it's a big gas can labeled gas. And then Connor's like, no, I'm just thirsty. And then drinks from the big gas can labeled gas.
Connor drinks from it. And then Carmella comes in. She's like, what are you doing? I love it, because never before have we had on Fashion Files a real life in real time person walk in. Like, it's almost like world.
We sort of had it with New Day that one time.
Mm-hmm. That's fair, yeah. So this would be the second.
But New Day seemed to fit in it a little bit more than Carmella.
Yeah, Carmella was just like, what is this?
She even says, like, I'm not a part of your skits. What are you doing? James, come with me.
So Fandango takes her briefcase. He needs to look inside of it. There's dirty underwear inside it, because Vince McMahon thinks dirty underwear is hilarious.
See, that was the part that didn't click for me about the Fashion Files segment, was just like,
that
oh,
was the part that
okay.
made me think, do you know what? They've went, we need to give Vince something here.
Yeah.
We need to give him something. And I think of all the things they gave him, this is probably the least offensive thing that would mess with Fashion Files. So,
oh, completely.
Carmella calls Ellsworth a bad dog, pulls him out of frame. Bree said another case is wrapped up, and Connor's like, are you serious? You've not solved one crime. Who broke in your office? The briefcase? 2B? Nothing.
Yeah, because it was clearly a different briefcase. I love, by the way, I love the fact that they tied in Carmella and her Money in the Bank briefcase with the mysterious light-up briefcase from the Fashion Files and integrated the worlds that way. I think it is so cool because I like having that weird, jarring, real-life Carmella wandering onto the set of Fashion Files and, like, becoming part of it without really wanting to be part of it. I like that it brings it back into the world so it doesn't feel like these exist completely separate from SmackDown, but they are absolutely... absolutely ridiculous.
Oh yeah, absolutely ridiculous in the best possible way.
I think they're balancing it well.
So basically Connor said, you know, it's clearly the Bludgeon Brothers, and Bree says, oh, there's no B in Brothers, and then Connor sort of like tries to educate him on it. He's like, ah, the B must be silent. And then Fandango says things are going to get even stranger, and then we have a plug for Stranger Things. I'm a big fan of Stranger Things, the show. And, like, there's a Netflix thing that's, like, counting down. I think it's, like, a day now until the next series comes up.
2 days until the 27th.
I'm going to try and get the exact countdown time of where we're at live here. I say live. It's, like, 4:45 in the afternoon here, and this is going to go up later tonight when I get home. So probably it's going to be off a little bit on my educated guess. But anyway, I love that they're tying in Stranger Things in the new season. It's tremendous. I think this is the best Fashion Files they've done.
I don't know if it's my favorite, but it is up there. I mean, all of them are up there. That's the problem.
One day, 15 hours, 15 minutes, and 21 seconds.
Yay!
So excited. Anyway, for me, I just think it was the best Fashion Files they've done. And in my head, because every time I watch Fashion Files, the problem is I always kind of go, oh, we're one step closer to the end. And then they just come up with something else. So.
Well, and I love the Ascension being added to it and Connor cracking the case and Connor and Victor just being like the straight men in the situation, kind of being like, you guys are ridiculous. You don't know anything. You haven't solved a thing. And then, you know, pointing out the Bludgeon Brothers and again, like 2B. And even then, Breeze and Fandango were like, no, it can't be them. Clearly not. So I'm curious if they're going to end up tying the Bludgeon Brothers into this or if that's just another red herring where we're just like, oh, or if we find out, yeah, they did it, but it doesn't end the Fashion Files or have any effect. And I'm fine with it either way. Like, I don't want a resolution. I want this to go on as long as they can continue making good skits. And they've been doing these since like May and they've been consistently good. It hasn't really gone downhill.
Nope, it's been very, very good. We cut backstage to one of the most interesting segments of the night where Daniel Bryan and Shane are together, and Shane has never disrespected Daniel Bryan. That's the difference, is that Shane is always trying to be, you know, whenever they've had their disagreements, they've always kind of like, you know, got on in the end. And here Bryan's kind of like, what were you doing last night? And Shane's like, you know, I'm the commissioner, it's my job to make calls my own sometimes, because Bryan said, I object to what you did.
And Shane has become Stephanie, essentially.
I would say that's a big stretch. Like, the way Stephanie treats performers is far worse than Shane.
I'm exaggerating for
effect.
Yeah,
okay, good. But so Brian's talking.
But it was
about
a very Stephanie-like thing to say.
Yeah.
Just not in as overlording a manner as Stephanie would do it, because, you know, she would tower over the talent and then probably slap them or something.
By the way, if you want to see something horrible, I watched this back the other night because I was excited. I watched the Survivor Series 2016, loved it, and I watched the State of the WWE address that they had.
Oh
my God.
Yeah.
Stephanie is the worst on that show.
She's terrible.
But anyway, Daniel Bryan says, you know, so Shane says, sometimes I need to make calls of my own, that's in my job description. And then Bryan said, well, listen, I think you're wrong, and I think you made a big mistake, and I'm just expressing my opinion. That's part of my job description. And walks off. And they kind of have this.
Daniel Bryan for being the good dad.
But what's good about it is it creates some conflict. It's, you know, you've got Daniel Bryan who wants to play by the rules. You've got Shane who wants to go rogue. You've got Kurt Angle who's, you know, all of a sudden making himself part of the Shield and, you know, getting himself involved. And there's a lot of plates at play. And I'm just hoping that, you know, I'm defending this because I think it's a decent story worth exploring. I just hope they don't let me down with how they choose to execute it going forward.
I hope it starts clicking for me because I'm not looking forward to the next month of television where I'm just annoyed about the whole overarching story. I don't want to be annoyed about it. I just am. So if they can...
Hopefully they make some sense. Like, I think what you're maybe looking for, because I think that you probably watch it in a different way in the sense of, like, you have this loyalty to SmackDown.
Well, I kind of have to.
You do,
like,
yeah.
I'm stuck being loyal to SmackDown.
But the thing is, like, I feel like for you, anyway, they have to give some more reasoning for SmackDown and what they're doing. That needs to be more of I thought what was quite effective was throughout the night they were showing, you know, they were really putting over Raw might try and counter attack, and, you know,
they kept showing footage of, like, a door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where nothing was happening.
Shane in the opening segment was saying, you know, we're ready if Raw come for us, which we'll get back to because that comes into play later on. Baron Corbin gets another match with Sin Cara. It goes about 3.5 minutes, and in the end, Baron Corbin gets himself disqualified because he just keeps striking Sin Cara. And then afterwards, he hits a really cool end of days on the outside. The crowd chant one more time, which tells you everything you need to know about the push of Sin Cara.
This was a title match, wasn't it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they call it a title match. But I was okay with this one because it was basically Baron Corbin not caring about a win and just wanting to beat up Sin Cara. I'm okay with that kind of DQ.
I assumed it was a title match because Sin Cara had a win over Baron Corbin and they would give Sin Cara a title match for that instead of just having him fight him again. I mean, now Sin Cara has 2 wins over Baron Corbin, so it has to continue. If this wasn't a title match, then
I think that's maybe
they
the idea.
Kind of need to have one.
That's maybe the idea, right? He gets a title match now because he's got these two kind of victories. And then Baron Corbin kills him in the third one.
Yeah. I mean, this is reminding me of Ellsworth and AJ Styles. Which is fine. It's fine. It's the same story, except for, you know, Ellsworth was a lot more entertaining and interesting, and this is Sin Cara and Baron Corbin.
I mean, I think the big difference is, like, last week he won by countout, and this week Corbin just beat him to death.
So yeah, which is very similar to the AJ Styles-Ellsworth thing.
I mean, Ellsworth pinned AJ Styles twice.
Pin him twice?
Yeah, he did. He pinned him twice. Mm. And he was the world champion. And it was James Ellsworth. At least Sin Cara is a wrestler who has won championships in the past. He's been an NXT tag team champion. He has been on WrestleManias. He's done stuff. So as much as I'm the last guy that's going to defend Sin Cara, like, because I think he actually looks like he's aged 12 years.
Well, I'm just saying it's a similar sort of story, right? Like, unlikely victories that aren't really, like, victories, because one was by count out.
I love that you know how to push my buttons, because you prod me with the Ellsworth thing, because you know that's my, like, my weakness. Like, if I ever hear a mention of the Ellsworth thing, I'm like, no! It's almost like you want me to feel unhappiness like you do. You're like, the Ellsworth thing, Kenny, remember that? Remember that?
Yeah, remember that, Kenny? Remember when you were raging? I'm raging now. You need to be angry, too.
Listen, I was angry 24 hours ago when I had to watch fucking Kane kill Finn Balor.
Yeah, I was pretty upset about that, and I really like Kane, but
I like Kane, too.
Bullshit.
Could have done it to anybody else.
Yep.
Anyway, so we get the Singh brothers out with Jinder. Jinder cuts a promo about, you know, calling Paul Heyman a liar, shows the clip from last night. Or the night before, sorry. Said, unlike the used car salesman Paul Heyman, he would tell them the truth. That was a good line. I'm going to get
that. I liked
that
the Singh brothers came out and said they were the advocates for the Maharaja.
Yeah, they were very funny. He said he'd earned everything he's ever received in WWE. Oh, that's good. Good, I like jokes.
Oh, see, Jinder's actually telling jokes now.
He's telling jokes. I don't think he meant it as one, but yeah, we'll take it. If I can find something entertaining, fair enough. He started at the bottom. Now he's the most powerful man in WWE.
<You know. laughs> He's so funny tonight.
He's so funny. He's on fire. All these zings. He said he doesn't get the respect here that he does get from the 1.3 billion people in India. I'd love to poll the entire 1.3 billion of India and see what percentage know who Jinder is.
I should have my bosses make a call.
I love the idea. I thought you were just being exceptionally racist and be like, I'll get my boss to make a call around India. She should be able to get
their family's there, so.
Get them to make that call. You work for them.
I'll just be like, hey, can you get on the phone? Have you ever heard of Jinder Mahal? And how do the 1.3 billion people in India feel about Jinder Mahal? Can you just, like, do some research for me?
Also, get them to say Jinder Mahal in case they only follow Raw.
Oh, gosh.
Jinder talks about, you know, you prove everyone wrong, especially the human walrus Paul Heyman, that the Maharaja era had just begun. I thought he did an okay promo, and as I said, with David on Raw, I think what they've managed to do, I do not know how, is they've managed to make me intrigued about this match, which I thought was impossible. I'm not saying that I want it or that it's my choice, but there's, like, a morbid curiosity of how the fuck they booked this.
Yeah, I am absolutely with you, because it's one of those situations where when Paul Heyman was talking on Raw and calling out Jinder and, you know, basically just laughing in Jinder's face, which is the proper response to a challenge from Jinder Mahal to Brock Lesnar, right? Like, he should absolutely laugh in his face because he's like, you're Jinder Mahal. And I got a feeling of dread. I was just like, I think Jinder might win this. I don't know, because, like, again, it's like everybody going into Backlash thinking there's no way Jinder Mahal wins this, right? Like, there's no way he becomes champion. And I was like, he's going to become champion. Like, that is 100% happening. So I wasn't mad when it happened. I actually laughed when it happened and thought it was funny. And, like, I don't know. I still maintain there could have been a good story to tell there. They just chose not to tell any good story whatsoever.
I love how much you're still like, they could have told a good story.
They could have. I stand by it.
Yeah, it's fair. Like, it's a good point.
The initial decision in May was not the worst decision in the world. The decision to do what they did from May to October was the worst decision, and that's my problem with it. But no, I am super intrigued to find out how they book this match, and it's watching it from the perspective of, I really wonder what decision's going to be made, not I want to see the match because it's going to be amazing, or I want to see how the match plays out because I think these two wrestlers facing off are equals in any sort of way. They're not. Like, Jinder is the underdog here, 100%. But it's kind of intriguing just from, like, a company standpoint and everything. And if that's what it takes to get me intrigued by the match, then I'm fine with it, I guess. Like, I'd rather be invested in a world title scene where I feel like the champion is an incredible, like, model for – not always has to be a role model, right? Like, some champions are heels and you don't want them to be role models. But, like, oh, I really want to see this guy get beat because he's so dastardly, and not because, like, oh, I really wonder when their corporate decision-making is going to expire.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how they play it. I said on the Raw Rundown as well, I'm just regurgitating myself, but this is Jinder's match that he has to prove a point.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. This is his shot. AJ Styles goes on to beat Sunil Singh very quickly in like 40 seconds with a calf crusher.
I wanted him to chuck him about the ring a little bit more. Well, like, I wanted it to be a murder of Sunil Singh, but, like,
you may
I
get
don't
that,
know.
Though, because Jinder does go to Daniel Bryan, demand that Samir now gets a match next week to defend his honour, and then Samir accepts. And what is it Samir says that Jinder tells him to shut up and makes him leave? Oh, yeah, Samir says it's going to be phenomenal. And then Jinder's like, shut up, leave. And then Bryan's like, didn't you say that last week?
Yeah, he's like, you made that joke last week. No, that was fantastic. And I love that the Singh brothers are trying to fight for the honor of Jinder, and they're like, they're so all in, right? They're like, yep, we are absolutely fighting for the honor of Jinder Mahal. And Daniel Bryan's like, are you sure? Like, are you sure you want to do this? Not that you don't love your Maharaja, but, like, have you met you and have you met AJ Styles? This is not going to go well for you. And it was actually, like, I swear I'm not bringing up the Ellsworth thing just to piss you off, but when AJ disposed of Sunil so quickly without any shenanigans, I was like, you know what? He's remembering those Ellsworth matches and how he needed to just, like, say, no, I'm not going to deal with you. I'm not going to underestimate you, but I'm just going to, like, kill you now. Like, I'm going to beat you in a handy fashion so that this doesn't go on and have some sort of shenanigans happen where it doesn't go my way. So I understand why AJ had to dispose of him so quickly, because he would have, you know, flashbacks to the Ellsworth situation, but I do want him to chuck Samir Singh.
PTSD is a real thing.
It is.
So then we have Kevin Owens talking to his best friend Sami Zayn backstage, saying that he has a qualifying match next week against Shinsuke Nakamura. And he said, and then Sami says, yeah, and then Team SmackDown will officially be the Team Kevin and Team Sami. And Team Kevin and Sami, and then Owens said, no, it would be Team Sami and Kevin. And I can just imagine Sondra screaming at the TV going, he did this to Chris Jericho! Don't believe him!
He did, but the detail that's different is that when Kevin Owens was teamed with Chris Jericho, and I love this, this is one of my favorite parts of the show too, when he was teamed with Chris Jericho kept saying, you know, Team Chris and Kevin. And Kevin said, kept saying, yeah, Team Kevin and Chris. This time, Kevin Owens is saying Team Sami and Kevin, and Sami Zayn is saying Team Kevin and Sami. So they switched it. So they're actually friends. And it's the coolest little detail, and I don't know how many people picked up on it, but it was one of my very, very favorite things, because I was like, that is so clever and multi-layered, because they're not only calling back to the whole Team Chris and Kevin dynamic that Kevin Owens had with Chris Jericho to make you think, like, oh, this is exactly what you had with Chris Jericho. But then when you realize that they switched it up, it's like, oh, but they're the real best friends. And that's so incredible. Like, it made my heart swell with pride and happiness.
And I think part of the reason I'm kind of... The Survivor Series thing is clicking for me is because there's lots of different variables and lots of different people involved. And Sammy and Kevin's story kind of becomes a part of it now. Which, I feel like we could just keep saying, this could be interesting. Like, we just don't know yet. Like, they need to... You know, like, what are they going to do on Raw on Monday to explain stuff? What's going to be... Like, somebody came up with a theory that I would love, which is that, like, Vince McMahon comes out and he says, you know, I'm sick of all the... You know, I love competition, I love what's going on, but, you know, you guys are just tearing each other apart. And he's like, if you're going to tear each other apart, let's do it for a reason. And then basically says that, like, you know, they do, like, a scoreboard of all the matches. So, like, mm-hmm. whoever wins, the winner would get spots 16 to 30 in the Royal Rumble, and the loser would get 1 to 15.
See, having stakes would help this for me.
Yeah,
like, because then there would be some sort of reason for this to be happening, because I just don't buy team solidarity as a reason. Like, I think you can have an interesting Raw versus SmackDown story without having one of those teams be a heel for me. Like, I love the dynamic. I love Raw versus SmackDown stuff. Like, I looked forward to Survivor Series last year and really, really loved it because of the Raw versus SmackDown matches. Well, my least favorite part last year was when the Raw women came and attacked the SmackDown women and Bayley was a part of it. I hated that because it was, you know, one of the starts to the downfall of Bayley being this, like, being Bayley, basically, right? Like, that's not her. That's not her character to do that. So having Becky Lynch, of all people, be involved in the SmackDown attack when she's supposed to be this amazing, noble, like, woman that you look up to, but she's just attacking people for no reason. That's what I don't like about it. I like the Raw versus SmackDown dynamic. I like getting to see matchups that we don't get to see very often. It's just, I would prefer it be presented in a way that's like, yep, we're going to have Raw versus SmackDown and have them build team solidarity in the episodes leading up to Survivor Series instead of just all of a sudden having team solidarity for no reason.
I guess for me, like, I think they all have a point. I think they, so, you know, props to a lot of the SmackDown people. They did social media videos to kind of explain what they did. They showed them on the show. I think that more needs to be said, like, from Becky Lynch's point of view, I think that more needs to be said about, you know, the Raw women getting more opportunities than the SmackDown. Like, she needs to explain why she's so angry. You know,
yeah.
And then if she explains it, I think it makes sense. But if she doesn't, it does not. But we then get this fatal five-way with these five. And Becky Lynch, in the end, gets the win by putting the disarmer on Tamina? I think it's Tamina, right?
Was it?
No, it's Carmella. Carmella.
It was Carmella, it was Carmella, I think.
Becky put the disarmer on Carmella. Props to Byron Saxton for sort of selling that, you know, she gets to be the team captain this year, so she gets vindication from last year. A Survivor Series.
See, the thing is, like, they're having, and they had it on Raw too, like, to become the team captain, but what does the team captain even get you? It's not like the team captain is picking the teams, because the team is already decided, so what's the point of being captain? I think we went through this last year too.
We did. We're going to go through it every single year. There is no point to being
a team captain.
It's like when you, it's like if you work somewhere and you're like a, you know, checkout operator, and they go, we're going to promote you to senior checkout operator, and you go, oh, does that pay more? No.
No.
But just giving you the word senior is supposed to make you happier.
I mean, I was happy to see Becky Lynch win a thing. I was very happy to see Becky Lynch win a thing. I like that she can be the team captain. I like that she can, you know, I mean, Becky is the type who's going to be like, yeah, call me captain, da 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 da. Like, she'll have fun with it. And that makes me happy. And I like seeing her get a decisive win. I do not like these fatal five-way matches because it's just, it's the death of single storytelling, especially leading into Survivor Series. I wasn't expecting anything different, but it's just, I swear, every week I go through this. It's like, do not put all the women in just one segment and just lump them all together, because that's not a story.
Agreed. But don't worry, Sondra. To make you happy, we have a backstage segment with Dolph Ziggler. He is talking about... I mean, I did like that they kind of sold, you know, that right, Ziggler and Rude were on the same team last night, but that's not their friends or anything. You know, and then Dolph Ziggler actually was going back and forth with Wade Keller on Twitter, sort of, like, explaining what, like, because Wade Keller has this thing where, like, he, no matter what WWE do, he dislikes it, for the most part. And that's not me, I'm not saying that from a place of criticism, but just from what I've listened to and my experience of, you know, he, like, something's too subtle, or it's not subtle enough, or he's never happy with the narrative in his own mind, which is fine, you know, you're allowed to critique wrestling the way that you want to. And he has a very big fan base that enjoy what he does. But what was interesting is Dolph Ziggler was tweeting him, and Dolph Ziggler was saying things like, you know, basically I think his point was, it's wrestling. You know, if you really look at wrestling, it's like, we both come out of the same curtain. You know? Mm-hmm. So, like, you can dissect stuff, but eventually you kind of have to go, oh, well, this is just part of this world. You know? And I think that I appreciated Dolph kind of going to bat for it a little bit. And
like, I understand Dolph's point. I think I'm strangely more with Wade Keller on this one, which doesn't happen very often. But I understand, like, I like that Dolph is trying to explain it like that. I do. And it does make sense because, I mean, why do people who constantly want to attack each other and want to attack each other and want to attack each other, like, why aren't those attacks all happening backstage? You can dissect it. But I think, I don't know, like, there's just a line of what you're willing to accept and what seems out there and takes you out of the story. And for me, this has just gotten to the point where it takes me out of the story.
Dolph and Bobby Roode have a segment. Basically, they're going to have a 2 out of 3 falls match next week, which is made official, and it's going to be for a spot in the Survivor Series team. Bobby Roode's going to win this, right? We don't need to worry about this, do we?
He had better fucking win this. Of all the people on the SmackDown roster that could have a 2 out of 3 falls match, they're giving us Roode versus Ziggler.
The good thing is that it'll be the end of it. Thank God.
Good. Because it hasn't been good any of the times I've seen it.
Well, the problem is Dolph Ziggler is very stale, and Bobby Roode is not a babyface, but he's been booked like one, which is an issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get to the... So we have that backstage segment. That leads us into the main event, Sami Zayn versus Randy Orton. They have a great match, 15 minutes, just really good. These guys work really well together.
Yeah, and I thought there were some bits of it that I thought were a little slow, because Randy, but it was a good match.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought the last 5 minutes were really, really good.
Yeah, it definitely picked up.
You got, you know, Zayn hitting the Helluva kick and Orton hitting the Draping DDT. Orton sets off the RKO. Kevin Owens runs down, jumps up in the apron. Orton goes to hit Owens with a Draping DDT, but Sammy rolls him up for a near fall. And then as the ref is getting Owens off. I love this continuity so much. As the ref is getting Kevin Owens off the apron, Sami Zayn goes to take care of Randy Orton, and Randy Orton returns the low blow that Sami Zayn did to him. And then Orton, like, does this, like, really, really creepy, like, he stares at Kevin Owens the whole time as he, like, props Sami Zayn up and does the RKO and gets the win. So he's in the Survivor Series team, and...
Boo.
Yeah, your hatred of Randy Orton aside, I thought this was really well presented. I really enjoyed it, and it makes me intrigued to see what Sami Zayn is going to be doing at Survivor Series. Almost makes me think that Nakamura and Orton are going to get on the team, and Sami and Kevin are not going to be on the team. Which then makes me think, what are they going to do?
I'm wondering if... See, I'm curious, because Sami Zayn getting beaten by Randy Orton here, when Sami Zayn is supposed to be, like, the top guy on SmackDown right now, like, one of them, right? Like, he and Kevin are supposed to running the show. And I found it really interesting that they just decided to beat Sami Zayn here, and it has to be part of a larger story or I'm going to go insane. I think there's still a dynamic of, you know, Kevin is super supportive of Sami and Sami is super supportive of Kevin, but Kevin Owens might be getting opportunities that Sami Zayn isn't still, right? Like, what if Kevin Owens does go on to be on the Survivor Series team and Sami Zayn doesn't? That could create some dissension. That could be interesting. I think it's a little too soon to be creating dissension with the two of them, but maybe not. Like, I'm intrigued by the dynamic of it. And even, like, you know, Kevin saying, I'm going to face Shinsuke and, you know, you're going to face Randy Orton and then we'll both be on the team and all this stuff. And so what if one of them is and one of them isn't? Is that going to create another, like, power struggle situation? Is that going to be problematic?
I
want Sami to be treated with care.
I think that Sami losing here is the more interesting story than him winning. I think if he'd won, it would just be, oh, he's in the team. Whereas him not being the team, I think it is part of a story. You know, they're very clearly positioned. I mean, the guy is all over the opening segment, has a midway segment, and is in the main event. They don't tend to position people that much unless they have plans for them. So,
I think it is the more interesting story. I mean, boo, because Randy Orton, and I don't like seeing him win things. But it's intriguing. It's intriguing for sure.
And then right at the end of the show, we cut backstage. Shane told Daniel Bryan, you know, we had a great show, and Raw didn't invade like we thought they might. And then Bryan said, they haven't, but they will. And he told Shane that eventually they're going to attack, and you need to be ready and accept the consequences of that. He told him, that's part of my job description, and walked off.
Bless Daniel Bryan for being the voice of reason.
What a great kind of tease of what's happening. And all I can really do is speak for me, and I haven't watched SmackDown live, as in up from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. in months, and I stayed up and watched the whole thing last night till the end. So for me, it's working because it's giving me some intrigue, but I understand it's not for everybody, but it's working for me. What did you think of the show overall? Where would your thumb be?
My thumb is thumbs down. I didn't enjoy it. I don't like all the Survivor Series stuff in it. It really harmed my enjoyment of the show, which sucks because I don't think everything on it was bad. I mean, Fashion Dogs obviously was amazing, and I like this Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn dynamic. I like Sami confronting Shane. I like, you know, bless Daniel Bryan for being the voice of reason here, but overall, I just wasn't a big fan. Another Fatal 5-Way match, like a Ziggler promo, Baron Corbin, Sin Cara, like I just... Without being into, like, I'm not into SmackDown right now because I don't like what they're doing, and it just sort of ruins the show for me, and that's a bummer. But I know, real quick, as you were talking about the whole, like, Raw didn't invade, but they will. I think it was Andrew on Twitter who got in touch with us and said he was at the show, and he said the crowd was absolutely raging that Raw didn't show up because they teased it all night and then nothing happened, and the crowd was like, what the fuck is this? Why did we come to the show when nothing happened? And obviously, like, it wasn't advertised that Raw was going to be there, but I just thought that was an interesting detail.
Yeah, for sure. That is pretty interesting. I guess we'll see what they're going to do next week on both shows to kind of keep this going. Interesting to see that, you know, with the women's and the ICUS, it's two heel versus heel matches. Is that going to stay the same way, or is it going to change? So... we'll find out. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to get in touch?
Where was your thumb on this show? Did you say?
Oh, my thumb was up. This was my favorite. Okay. This was my favorite SmackDown in the last 3 months.
Interesting.
Well, mainly because I think a lot of what I'm excited about is potential and not actually what's being done. So I accept that. But I think that I'm digging the Sami Zayn stuff a lot. I like the him and Kevin Owens partnership. I thought that Orton was good on the show. The Fashion File stuff was great. I like the Daniel Bryan, Shane both going at it from a different angle. Becky Lynch won a thing. You know,
She did win a thing.
Yeah, so for me it worked, but I understand why it didn't work for you. I get it. You can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes for even more content. We have an almost 2-hour TLC review, which veers into topics that you can only imagine that David and I would veer into when we are let loose in a paywall.
I'm shaking my head because I have listened to the show.
It was good though, right?
It was. It was good. I enjoyed it. I could just shake my head at you two.
So yeah, you can check that. Sandra and David are recording this week for Patreon.
Yeah,
they're
I'm
recording
excited.
A fave five to of things to get people into wrestling. I'll be amazed if they both have one of the same things on their list. I'd be amazed. But that's what's going to make it so fun to listen to. So that'll be up soon at the $5 level. But people can get Sondra on Twitter at SondraRosRW. You can get me at KennyMC1985, Inside_TheRopes, or you can go to insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets to Shawn Michaels in January, Kevin Nash in November, Scott Hall in December, and much, much more. Thank you for listening, everybody. We appreciate all your support. And just to make Sondra feel better, let's play it out with the tune of Breezango and their Fashion Files. See you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
I hear voices in my head. They counsel me, they understand, they talk to me. You got your rules and your religion, all designed to keep you safe. But when rules start getting broken, you start questioning your faith. I have a voice that is my savior, hates to love and loves to hate. I have a voice that has the knowledge and the power to your fate. I hear voices crying, I see heroes dying, I taste blood that's drying.